Welcome back to the Young Turks, everybody. John Iadarola, J.R. Jackson on the panel. And not only is he on the panel, it's just us.
Hey, you know, so that means we can mess things up, take over. As John just said before we came on, yeah, I'm tweeting. Because we can do that. Playing the role of Ben Mankiewicz.
He'd be on his laptop.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I should have brought mine in.
Him and Jimmy love the laptop.
As John just said, you guys don't know some of the back indoor. And so it's inside baseball is the term of what happens there. He said, we're going to burn this place down.
Screw it. Okay. He leaves. That's what happens.
See, they talk about terrorists and stuff, but this guy.
I don't know why we have to take it in that direction. But anyway, we do have a big show. Obviously, the Sessions testimony just ended like less than an hour ago. And so we're going to be talking about that. I knew we'd be talking about that. I didn't know how big of a portion of the show it's probably going to end up taking up.
But you know,
a lot actually happened.
A lot happened and we can't even get to it all. You know what? I think specifically a lot of times these hearings, the Comey hearings started like 8 in the morning, our time. We're on the West Coast. 8 in the morning, I was like, man, as soon as I'm up, I'm like on all this stuff. And then I have to get ready, get to work, hear it, analyze it, cut it, all this stuff. And then still talk about it.
Yeah.
They started this one late because they know the Young Turks were really going
to
get into it. So they want to start late so we can get to it. It's all about us.
Yeah, it's pretty clear at this point that's what's going on. But we do have a lot more for you once we get past Sessions. I want to spotlight a couple of recent hires at the EPA and the Department of Justice having to do with investigations into those who pollute and destroy the environment that tell you everything you need to know about the priorities of the Trump administration. If we have time, at the end of the show, we are going to do a little flashback to yesterday's most bizarre cabinet meeting in US history. Some fun video there. And then also, I want to shed some light. I recently found some data on how much the average American makes, what the cutoff point is for the majority of Americans. And it was interesting, but I think I have a spin on it that's actually more interesting. And we'll get to that after our first break. But we're going to start off with Sessions. Today, the Attorney General Jeff Sessions testified, and he did his damnedest to say as little as possible. And along the way, he crafted this very interesting BS legal argument for why he didn't need to answer their questions, while at the same time not asserting or having Donald Trump assert executive privilege. And so let's look at this happened over and over and over throughout the testimony, but we're going to start off with Sessions talking with Angus King.
What is the basis of your refusal to answer these questions?
Senator Kaine, the president has a constitutional.
I understand that, but the president hasn't asserted it.
Well,
you said you don't have the power to assert the power of executive privilege. So what is the legal basis for your refusal to answer these questions?
I am protecting the right of the president to exert it, assert it if he chooses. And there may be other privileges that could apply in this circumstance.
So, I mean, it's both infuriating and also a little funny. So he's saying, okay, you think we have to actually assert executive privilege to not answer your questions, but I'm just protecting his right to someday ever assert it. Because we're led to believe that Donald Trump didn't know that Jeff Sessions would be testifying today and didn't know that he could assert executive privilege if he wanted to. Is that what is actually going on at the White House? I don't think that's what's going on.
Well, no, he doesn't. They, again, before they even came, they were preparing for this. And we'll get to later with what else they are preparing to answer or not answer as things are going. But Kellyanne Conway was, before he even came on, said Sessions is willing to cooperate and share what he knows. So, of course, what are you going to share what you don't know? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, we're going to try and cover up as much as possible, say what we can say and not say, and also what we choose to say, and then cover it up with this guise of the reasons why we can't say it. Now, there was reasons behind this whole testimony in the first place, this hearing being called. Some of the things that former FBI Director James Comey said about his worries and issues with Jeff Sessions' recusal from the Russian investigation. Also, then if he's recused from the Russian investigation, how much of a hand he had in the firing of James Comey. Because as the president said specifically, he was fired because of the Russian investigation. Then he wasn't,
clear.
And then he was before he was, but then after he was. Also his meetings with different Russians and Kislyak in particular. So with all these things is what he had to answer. Just to give you some more specifics about what he wasn't answering about.
Yeah.
So as we go through all this, just remember, there's lots of angles. And last week, I believe was when Kamala Harris was asking about his angles and his potential allowance of letting the Russian investigation go. that's the reason why this is all culminated to where we are.
Yeah, and look, we're gonna touch, as Jared said, on a number of different angles on this. I wish that we had more that we could reveal, but when you combine the fact that he apparently doesn't remember anything about his life with the few things that he theoretically does remember, he's saying he doesn't have to talk about, you get almost no information. And I want you to consider what it would be like if everyone testifying before Congress or for perhaps a special counsel used this same argument, that we don't have to assert executive privilege because someday perhaps the president might want to, which is cool because then you get all of the benefits of exerting executive privilege or asserting it without having the obvious suspicious nature of that. Now, I don't think it's gonna work. I think that in this case, it's very obvious that it's weird that he refuses to reveal anything about his conversations with Donald Trump on important issues, like whether he actually ever talked about the Russia investigation, whether he talked about wanting to shut down the investigation, put pressure on James Comey, all of these incredibly relevant questions. I would say the reasons that Session was brought in the first place, he can't talk about any of that because someday, theoretically, Donald Trump might want to use executive privilege. That is absolute BS. None of the senators were buying it. Some tried to distract from it. And I looked at the media coverage of this afterward. And interestingly, Fox News, Breitbart, no mention of this weird legal strategy in their coverage of it. But you need to know going into our coverage that that is that's the main impediment to us knowing more about what's actually going on, is that they don't want to reveal anything, but they also know how bad it'll look if they choose not to under their actual constitutional
abilities.
Right.
So before we go into more of these, I did see, before we really got to cutting, I did see his opening statement. Jeff Sessions did, at least there was one thing that stuck out to me. He admitted that he was in a way involved with the recommendation to fire James Comey. And in saying that, he said, yeah, I admitted that I was part of it, but just because I recused myself from a Russian investigation because I was part of the campaign apparatus, it doesn't mean that I'm not allowed to have input on the FBI director because there's tons of investigations, there's tons of work that's going on. So at least he admitted that he had a part in that, but then he had a justification for why he had a part in that.
Which is BS, yeah.
But yeah, because then now they'll say that it had nothing to really do with that, it had to do with other things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the issue of whether Jeff Sessions' recusal from the Russia investigation actually is worth a damn was a big part of at least the first half of the testimony today. Now, he has a great quote, and we're gonna show you the video. So this is a video 11 where he attempts to distract, to start up this weird little emotional tangent to get you to forget what the actual question is. So we're gonna play this video and then we're gonna break it down.
Respectfully, you're not answering the
question. Well, what is the question?
The question is, Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? They are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute
certainty. I can tell you that. And he also went on to say this eventually. I recused myself from any investigation into the campaign for president, but I did not recuse myself from defending my honor against scurrilous and false allegations. Well, that's good. No one's accusing you of that. That doesn't make any sense. And I have no idea what you're talking about. What they're accusing you of is something very simple. It's you said you would not be involved in any matters having to do with the Russia investigation. Then you're involved in the signed letter that recommended that James Comey gets fired. So as JR pointed out, his defense of that is saying that I didn't recuse myself from everything having to do with the head of the FBI, which is true. But you know damn well that this situation where you have Donald Trump saying that what was on his mind, his rationale for firing him was that the Russia investigation is a hoax and it needs to be shut down. The idea that you didn't know about that, that you don't know that that's the principal thing that James Comey is working on at that particular moment. We know from news reports at the time that he had just requested additional resources for that investigation. He's fired inside of 48 hours of that request. You might have some sort of case that this doesn't violate your recusal if we forget everything else we know about what's been going on in this country. Now, there's some other sections I wanna talk about. So this is something that JR brought up. The question of Jeff Sessions' meetings with Russian officials, Kislyak, the ambassador, obviously one of the biggest ones, but there were a number of other possible meetings that he had to talk about. Here he is speaking with Senator Burr.
communications with Russian officials for any reason during the campaign that have not been disclosed in public or to this committee?
I don't recall it, but I have to tell you, I cannot testify to what was said.
From your testimony, you said you don't remember whether Ambassador Kislyak was there, the Russian ambassador. Is that correct?
I did not remember that. But I understand he was there. So I don't doubt that he was. I believe that representations are correct. In fact, I recently saw a video of him coming into the room.
But you never remember having a conversation or a meeting with Ambassador Kislyak?
So that was just one of many things that he doesn't quite recall. I love that nobody says anything about can't quite recall unless they're speaking to Congress and they're hiding something. Nobody uses that in
it's
regular
weird.
Speech.
Now, you know, there's the defense, an ongoing defense that certain people in government, he was a senator, and they always have conversations with foreign leaders or foreign ambassadors, Kislyak, or people that are involved in different things, and they'll all be in a room speaking. And it's a very necessary thing. Fine, whatever, right? It happens across all lines, across all political parties. But the thing is, after you do, if you have a reason to speak to somebody, don't you have a reason, even if it's not nefarious, if it's a real good reason, you're trying to advance America's cause in the world, you'd brag about that, right? But you don't remember? You remember something, whether or not it's good or bad, you should remember whether or not you've had a conversation with a world leader and their influence and our influence in the world. But just, so why do you have these meetings if you don't remember them being there or what the hell you talked about?
Yeah, and look, he's gonna say, as you say, he meets lots of people. And I'm sure that he does meet a lot of people now and then. But this isn't just any ambassador, this is the ambassador to Russia. And it's not just that we're talking now about the possibility that Russia was massively involved in trying to influence the election. We were talking about it then.
Yeah.
You don't meet with the ambassador of a country that we're concerned is tampering with our election at that time, and it just, you know, in one ear, out the other. That's not how memory works, okay? Some things stand out. And the fact that you're talking to the ambassador, to one of our chief rivals, who's at that time involved in a campaign to influence our election, of course you remember that. And look, the fact that he lied about it in his Senate hearings is another good reason that he should have never, in his hearings to become the AG, another good reason he should have never actually gotten the position. And Tom Cotton said, basically, that unless spycraft looks like it does in a Jason Bourne movie, nothing could actually be up. That it has to look like a spy novel or a spy movie. It's a ridiculous aside. And at the end of the day, I don't even know. The meetings with Kislyak, do I think that Kislyak talked to Sessions after his speech at the RNC and said something incredibly damning? Probably not, and I have no idea. But it is incredibly suspicious that everyone in Trump's orbit had repeated contacts with Russian officials and businessmen, and all of them, when it comes time to write down on an official form who you met with, they all suspiciously forget about it, whether they're old men like Jeff Sessions or Jared Kushner. When it comes time to get their security clearances or to get a position in government, they all universally forget about those meetings. That's incredibly suspicious.
It's just the way it works. So then the go-to strategy in these hearings is to not remember or to not be able to speak about it. It happened a lot in previous ones. Comey revealed a lot, but then there was things he couldn't talk about. The intelligence committees, they had to talk about, oh, I can't say it in an open session. So there's value in these things, and I said it from the last ones. There's values in these, but there's also a lot of frustration. And then if you can go with the go-to of, well, the media is just out to get us, all you can do left, all that's left to do is to speculate on what the rest of the story is. Mm-hmm. Because they'll give you a piece of it and then say, well, I can't answer the rest of that. My bad, it's just the way it works. And then now that they're off in the dark, we don't know what else to say. Yeah. And then this, everything else that comes out then is media speculation because they're out to get us.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and look,
and
he talked about
that
a little there.
Display.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, actually, it's gonna be the next story. Kamala Harris had a great interaction with Jeff Sessions where she, like others, was trying to break through this ridiculous legal fiction that he had created to stop himself from having to reveal conversations he's had with Donald Trump. But she did it particularly well, and you could see how it was influencing Jeff Sessions in real time. Let's roll video 8 now.
Did you have any communications with Russian officials for any reason during the campaign that have not been disclosed in public or to this committee?
I don't recall it, but I have to tell you, I cannot testify to what was said as we were standing at the Republican convention before the podium where I spoke.
My question is only as
don't have
the
detailed memory of that.
Okay, as it relates to your knowledge, did you have any communication with any Russian businessmen or any Russian nationals?
I don't believe I had any conversation with Russian businessmen or Russian nationals.
Are you aware of any communications?
A lot of people were at the convention. It's conceivable that somebody came up to me.
Sir, I have just a few.
Well, you let me qualify it. If I don't qualify it, you'll accuse me of lying. So I need to be correct as best I can.
I do want you to be honest.
And I'm not able to be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
Don't say that.
I want you again. So this
is
this is
public urinal.
This is
okay.
I don't want to assume so, but this is a sworn testimony he's having in front of Congress. So think of it like court. You go in, you put your hand on the Bible, you raise your right hand, and you swear that you're going to tell the truth. So I just want you to imagine a two-bit accused criminal going in front of the judge and jury or whoever is deciding his fate. And then for the whole time he's asked questions by the prosecutor, he goes, I mean, not to my knowledge. I mean, I live in the area and I was near the convenience store. I've been in there before, but I can't tell you on the night of May 13th if I was actually in there at 6 to 7 o'clock when the crime took place. Maybe I was. And you just keep talking. They're going to go shut up and answer the question.
Yeah.
But if someone else tells me, hey, that's not what I was asking you, suddenly it's rude to step in and ask that the question get answered, because we have to respect certain people who are just as potentially corrupt and nefarious as these two-bit criminals that we're ready to lock away immediately.
Yeah, they would be pissed at you, and the police in your hypothetical don't have a 5-minute limit on how much they can talk, which it's ridiculous. I mean, I know these hearings go on, there's a lot of senators, but the time limits just don't make any sense to me. But I want to move on to this next section because my tease to that video was actually incorrect. But here is where they're going to get into. If you're going to say that theoretically the president can assert executive privilege later on, so you get to by proxy do it now without actually doing it. If you're going to use this argument that we've never heard before, why didn't you actually bring any supporting information about it? And like in a video we showed you last week, things are going to get a little bit testy and there's going to be an attempt to shush her.
Can you tell us what policy it is you're talking about?
Well, I think most cabinet people, as the witnesses you had before you earlier, those individuals declined to comment because we're all about conversations with the president.
Sir, I'm just asking you about the DOJ policy you referred to.
A policy that goes beyond just the attorney general.
Is that policy in writing somewhere?
I think so.
So did you not consult it before you came before this committee knowing we would ask you questions about
that? Well, we talked about it. The policy is based.
Did you ask that it would be shown to you?
The policy is based on the principle that the president.
Sir, I'm not asking about the principle. I'm asking when you would be asked these questions and you would rely on that policy.
Chairman,
did you not ask your staff to show you the policy that would be the basis for you refusing to answer the majority of questions that have been asked?
Should be allowed to answer the question.
Senators will allow the chair to control the hearing. Senator Harris, let him answer.
Please do. Thank you.
We talked about it. And we talked about the real principle that's at stake. It's one that I have some appreciation for, as having spent 15 years in the Department of Justice, 12 as United States Attorney. And that principle is that the Constitution provides the head of the executive branch certain privileges, and that members, one of them is confidentiality of communications. And it is improper for agents of any department any departments in the executive branch to waive that privilege without a clear approval
Chairman,
of the president.
I have asked.
And that's the situation
Mr.
we're in.
For a yes or no, did you ask?
So the answer is yes. I consulted.
Did you ask your staff to see the policy?
Senator, time expired.
Apparently
Senator
not.
Cornyn.
Yes, so, I consulted with my staff about how not to answer these questions, and they told me to filibuster because. The people who are going to be asking me these tough questions will only have a short time limit to do so. So if I talk as much as possible, I can maybe get out of here with my neck.
What you don't understand, it's the principle of the thing. It's the principle. Yeah, he kept returning to that. He consulted about, you know, okay, here's our defense. Tell me about it. Tell me what I got. And then they said, okay, so when somebody asks you for specifics, just pull your pockets out. You got nothing. You got nothing because it doesn't exist. It's not the principle of the thing. The principle is that you don't want to answer the damn question. But here's the thing. He's doing all of this smoke and mirrors to resist having to answer a couple of incredibly simple questions. But the cool thing is that in trying to not answer the questions, we know what the answer is. For instance, one of the questions that kept coming up is, in your conversations with Donald Trump, did he ever talk about Comey and the Russia investigation? Well, I can't answer anything about a conversation with the president. No, if it was no, you'd say it because it would help you at that point. Obviously, absolutely, it would help you and it would help Donald Trump. The only case in which you don't answer that question is because, yes, obviously Donald Trump did talk to you about it. It was clear from you that he was trying to pressure Comey when he asked you to leave the room before those private conversations with the former head of the FBI, and you left the room. You were willing to do that. You knew what was going on, you devious little goblin of a man. You knew what you were doing, and now you're trying to evade any responsibility for it. And hopefully, smart people watching his testimony and reading about it later on can see through the BS and know that that is the truth.
Yeah, I was doing what I was told by the president, and that's a bad answer.
Yeah.
But that's the truth.
Exactly.
That's why you left the room.
Yeah, I was following orders, never a good answer to a question about immoral or unethical behavior. By the way, one more thing. When talking about the firing of James Comey and the fact that it looks like it pretty clearly violated his pledge to recuse himself from this matter, his defense was, it wasn't about that. It was about Dem emails, though, that we didn't like the way he handled the situation with Hillary Clinton before the election, so he had to be fired as a result of that. Now, thankfully, as a lot of people have pointed out, that directly contradicts not just reality, but Jeff Sessions himself in previous statements he's made. So he said this back last fall in response to a question from Lou Dobbs about his handling of the Hillary Clinton situation. Jeff Sessions said this about Comey. Comey has done what his duty is, I think. He's got evidence to go forward now with further criminal investigation. He has no other responsibility than to follow that and then tell the American people what he's doing. And that's just one statement. He's made two or three statements where he said, yeah, his handling of the situation was perfectly fine. That's one of the reasons, theoretically, he might stay on as head of the FBI. But then the situation changed, not having to do with Hillary Clinton's emails, but having to do with Russia. And we know that that eventually ended up with James Comey being fired.
It doesn't make any sense. What reason would you have to go back and talk about emails from somebody you beat?
That you're mad that he revealed something about a possible investigation? No, obviously that's not what it is. And you know that that more than likely helped you at least a little bit in the closing days of the election. Nobody buys that. As I
celebrated as I was helping him.
Exactly. He's either lying or he is the only person on the planet who genuinely believes that. I think that the lying is a little bit more likely at this point. Anyway, at this point, we do have to take our first break. When we come back, that whole special counsel thing we've been talking about, that may not last that much longer. We'll break down why that might be when we come back from this break. Welcome back to TYT, everybody. John and JR, we've got some tweets we want to read. A couple of good ideas here, actually. So Daniel Perea says, congressional committee hearings should be chess clocked. Congress people's time only ticks down when they're talking. That seems like a perfectly reasonable. Like Kamala Harris didn't talk for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's their speaking.
Why should that little troll? Anyway,
chess clocked.
El Duende Chingon said this, cop, sir, are there any drugs in the vehicle? Me, I don't recall. Cop, get out. That's how it works in the real world. I don't quite recall. I remember I did weed once. I don't really. Anyway, Rommel J. Guzman says more than half of the members of federal government should be in hospice. These people barely know where they are half the time. And yeah, that's one of the things that I've noticed watching the Comey testimony and this is our elected representatives are really old, man.
Well, and also all the ones that are, as we found out with Jeff Sessions, even people that are appointed to positions, high positions, they consistently get briefed and told exactly which sentences
the
to
hatch
say.
Thing yesterday,
their staff does the work. And I get it because there's a lot of information, so you need people that are like constitutional scholars or constitutional like wonks and nerds, and that's just it. Oh, this aspect you need to remember, Senator.
Yeah,
I get that. But they don't really know much anything else. Once you lean on them that much, you don't have to have much else behind you.
Yeah, if they, oh man, God help them if they stay up late watching a Diamondbacks game or something. Oh, they're just out of it for like a week. And look, older people, obviously, in our society, as in societies throughout world history, have accrued wisdom and context that we may not be familiar with. But at a certain point, I mean, it's one of the reasons Kamala Harris, like, I think, strikes a chord with a lot of people is because she is right there in the moment with her razor sharp lawyer's mind. If she ever says she doesn't recall anything, she lying. Because she never forgot anything in her whole life.
She knew exactly where she was going, and he can tell where she's going with this line of question. He's like, I am being like walked right down the death row.
Yes, exactly.
She's about to zero in and get me.
Like someone like Jeff Sessions, man, like when he leaves that room, I don't know if he can figure out how to Uber home. Like just at some point the world can pass people by. And that says more about the world than them. That's okay. You can retire at some point.
Before we go further, people ask, so I answer. Another T. I know this isn't a TYT shirt, I apologize. But the good people at Riot Society, riotsociety.com, check out those t-shirts. They got fun stuff. I got a few of them from them and I rock it.
Riot Society. I rock. Look at this
TYT
lefty.
Shop TYT.com.
At some point in the near future, I'll support this company, but not today.
But right now, Riot Society. Anyway. I mean, I can't recall whether or not I met with them.
Get out.
But I know I have before spoken with them, maybe before or after I wore the shirt.
One of those two. He might need to claim that he never bought that shirt in the future. So anyway, okay, we're gonna jump back on the news though. On yesterday's show, we talked about this rapidly brewing narrative that maybe the special counsel, Robert Mueller, maybe he needs to be fired. And that sort of, I thought, came out of nowhere, considering all the compliments that had been thrown Mueller's way, that all of a sudden you had all these right wingers, including Newt Gingrich and others, saying, oh, really shady though, don't listen to what I said before, don't trust my lying tweets, he might need to go. And what do you know? Yesterday, just a couple of hours after our initial coverage of that, suddenly from a Trump friend, sounds like Mueller might not be long for this investigation, which you're gonna see in this video.
Believe that the president is seriously considering getting rid of Bob Mueller, and why do you think that?
I think it's a consideration the president has had because Mueller is illegitimate as special counsel. Chris, remember, there is no evidence of wrongdoing. There's no evidence of collusion. There's no evidence of obstruction.
I don't understand what this newfound disparagement is about.
I have no disparagement for Bob Mueller.
You just said he's illegitimate as special counsel. That's not nice.
Correct. But I said as a man, I'm saying as a man, I think he did a great job running the FBI.
As a man, he's great, but get rid of his ass, he's illegitimate. Well, who's speaking then if not the man himself? So that is apparently a close friend and occasional confidant of Donald Trump. He's considering it. And the response from the White House was sort of a denial. And Rosenstein, who testified earlier today, was asked whether he has confidence in Mueller's integrity and in his investigation. He said yes. The follow-up question was, does the president have confidence in him? I don't know. Well, that's not a good sign. Ask James Comey myself about that. And so that gets a little bit suspicious, but it's interesting that it's been sort of backed up by some other Republicans. So in this next video, I believe you, trust me, don't worry. In this next video, you're gonna see Paul Ryan blaming not all the Republicans that are now bad-mouthing Mueller, but the media for this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, all I've heard so much are rumors, but I think in the best case for the president is to be vindicated by allowing this investigation to go on thoroughly and independently. So I think the best advice would be to let Robert Mueller do his job.
When did you convey your opinions to the president on Mr. Mueller
that he should just let the investigation continue? What's that? And,
let Mueller go?
There's no debate that's going on here. You're
saying this is.
Yeah, this is. I heard this is like a rumor you heard last night. So there's really not some big debate that's occurring on this. you're creating, like I said, Kevin just met it. You're creating a debate that's not occurring here. This is something that I think was a rumor that came out last night. So. We are focused on solving people's problems. What I think the American people want to know is that their government's working.
We would like to know that. And I look forward to the days when it does. There. So you know you're dealing with a prepared talking point when they say the exact same words three times in a row there. So it's not, you know, all these newfound Republican critics. It's not Newt Gingrich. It's not a friend of Trump saying that he's considering dismissing or firing Mueller. It's all on the media, which was undercut slightly by, I would have to say, one of the most respectable politicians on the Republican side. Let's take a look at this.
I had no idea how dirty this mess was involving Comey and Mueller over the years. And Comey manipulated through this leaking to get a special counsel when we don't need one. We know now for sure there is no collusion between this administration and Russia. Let's at least stop that facade. Let's stop that distraction.
Louis,
rid of Mueller.
Well, what about
he is dirty. He created all kinds of problems.
Get rid of him. He's dirty. He's caused all kinds of problems. What I couldn't tell you what he's done other than the fact that he's hired some people. He's caused all these problems.
All kinds of problems.
He's off in a room with a desk somewhere. I have no idea what he's doing. I don't think you do either.
It's gotten so blatant. He's caused all kinds of problems for this president and his administration. He's disrupting all the things they're trying to do without anyone finding out. What is he like, some kind of special investigator? Who hired this guy? Somebody get rid of him. You know, he's about to disrupt everything that we're trying to do here.
Yeah. Yeah, now look, so a lot of people very worried that theoretically Trump might take what should be an unthinkable step in firing the special counsel that's investigating him right now for obstruction of justice, thereby committing obstruction of justice to stop the investigation into obstruction of justice. It's justiception, I've termed it.
I'm actually mostly surprised to find out that Louis Gohmert is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist who keeps revving these things up in the media, you know, because he has his own show.
That's true.
He has a podcast, you know, he's part of the network, am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, and look, it would be, I think as a lot of people have pointed out, it should be unthinkable if he were to fire him. A president cannot shut down investigations into his own illegal behavior. I think most people get how terrible that would be, that's obviously grounds for impeachment at that point. Whether it could ever happen under the Republican Congress, obviously is a different question. But think about that. Like, first of all, how much must he be hiding if he's willing to do something that theoretically might be unconstitutional in shutting this down to stop the investigation? You do not take those steps if you have nothing to hide. But then again, to appeal to the people who theoretically don't care about this investigation, you know the sorts of crimes he's committing in terms of corruption, the massive amounts of money that he's ready to hand off to his real estate buddies, amongst others, federal contractors and all that. What's going to happen if we try to investigate wrongdoing there? Is he going to fire those special investigators? I think that this would be setting an incredibly dangerous precedent, an illegal precedent.
He's the only person who thinks doing this wouldn't look horrible.
Yeah, I mean, just like the firing of James Comey.
It's just to double it up and then to see this as a pattern for how he gets out of things, he would miss that completely.
You would think, yes. Now, supposedly Rosenstein, who would be the person with the legal authority to fire Mueller, said this morning in his testimony that he wouldn't do that unless there was good cause. But he also thereby, by saying that, says that theoretically if there was a good cause, we might have to fire him, which I guess that makes sense. But what is the good cause that would justify shutting down this investigation? They've come up with all these arguments that theoretically someone he hired 7 years ago, 10 years ago, donated $3,000 to a Democrat. I got news for you. Any DC lawyer has contributed to one of the two parties. If a contribution makes it invalid that you could be involved in this investigation, you'll never have an investigation. And back when Ken Starr was investigating Bill Clinton's behavior, those guys had donated to Republicans. I don't remember a lot of these guys raising issues with that then. And there are 100. They were around back then to raise those objections if they had them.
They are 100.
That they didn't. Anyway, okay, let's move on to something slightly different before we take our second break.
In other words, wait for this to happen.
Yes. We'll see. Yes. We'll see. I didn't use the master that
I know. We're waiting.
We're waiting.
Hold.
It's crazy, but it could happen anytime. Between the end of this show and the beginning of the next one, it could theoretically happen. Okay. We all know that our economy has left a great number of American workers behind, that it does not prioritize them, that it is there to serve corporate greed. But the state of our pay is actually even worse than you might think, even worse than those who are shedding light on it might think. So let's bring up this chart, because I came across this today, and it shows that right now, half of all American workers make less than $20 an hour. Now, if that's your headline, that should be scary. Like, theoretically, half of the entire country is making less than $20 an hour. I mean, punch into any rent calculator where that lets you live in America, and that's stark. Half of America, $20 per hour. So that's something. But if we were in a just America, in a just economy, that would mean something far darker. Let's bring up this next chart. And what you're gonna see there is the real value of the minimum wage versus productivity. So you have productivity shooting up over literally the past 60 plus years, and yet the actual value of your dollar if you're on the minimum wage is not going up. In fact, in many years it's going down when you should be making two or three times as much by then. Let's bring up this next chart. You're gonna see there what the minimum wage should be. If it just kept pace with other wages, it would be at $11.35, significantly higher than it is now. And if it actually kept pace with productivity, which means if people were being paid for what they were producing, back in 2016, it would have been worth $18, almost $19. Some estimates put it even higher, which means that the story, the headline should not be that half of all Americans are making less than $20 an hour. It's that half of our goddamn country is on a just minimum wage. If it simply had kept pace with inflation, now not considering anything else, the fact that theoretically we should be doing better over time, not just keeping pace, half of our country is on a just minimum wage. Wow. That's crazy.
So half our country is making what teenagers at McDonald's should be making. I hate should the comparison to keep going with, because there's lots of jobs at a minimum wage that isn't just the McDonald's one, and lots of people doing them that are not 15, 16 year olds that are just getting
people
out
with 15,
workforce.
16 year olds.
Absolutely. So I saw a friend of mine, I think there was an Instagram post where she discovered, this is just LA, the median rate of rent in Los Angeles, it's a huge, huge city, is over $11,000 a month for rent. And we're talking, of course, month, because of the average of how many costs of living in this city. If you drive through the nice parts of town, you're like, oh, people may rent the city.
Oh,
or if you go to the
saying.
Beach,
okay, yeah.
And you're like, oh, I wonder how much that place for rent is that where this beach house is. If you look at the average, so there's so many that are lower, but then so many that are so high, the median is $11,000 a month for rent.
Yeah.
So think about the people who, of course, everyone's not living in, but that's just the middle. So how much you have to make to support that as plenty of adults. How do you pull that off? You don't have your 5-6-year-olds work. You're like, well, you're contributing to the house. It's a place to be in where you have nowhere to turn.
Yeah.
And I understand, yes, again, this is LA, one of the most expensive cities in the world. I understand that. But the amount that people get paid, it's also comparable. I mean, you see the cost of living in other cities, it's probably just the same feel for how much you have coming in, for how much you have to actually put out. That's just for rent.
Yeah.
We're talking about food later, and then after that, health. Shoes, clothes. I mean, this stuff isn't cheap. I go to cheap places to buy stuff for my kid. That shit is not cheap.
Yeah, it's still not cheap. Yeah, that's totally true. Can we go back to graphic 18, that first chart? Because there's something else here that I thought is a little bit scary. So you're seeing there, I know that you can screenshot this if you want. You're seeing the percentage of the population that makes at least that much money. As you go from left to right, you make more money. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, once you get into $40 an hour, you're at like 3% of the population. Maybe 4 or 5% of the population makes more than that. $40 an hour, I mean, we're not talking about own your own island wages at that point. We're talking about adjusted for inflation, you know, a good, solid, hardworking, full-time job back, you know, 40, 50 years. And so, like in this, we're focusing on the fact that those who don't make a ton of money are being left behind, but we're all getting left behind. And when those at the bottom are making so little, it makes it easier for those who set these wages to justify paying people in the so-called middle class even less as well. I mean, 3 or 4% of the population is making more than theoretically the vast majority. I mean, think about the productivity gains. Think about
absolutely
the modernization, the information economy, computers, robots, all of that. We can produce so much more than we used to. And we're effectively, at best, arguably treading water with the 1950s. That is insane.
It's one of those things when it comes to productivity, and the fact that productivity is still up that rate, based comparable to how badly we pay employees in this country, it actually is somehow still works out, because there's a lot of studies, and I can't quote them because I remember talking about it in high school and college, about how if you just treat your workers in a certain way, the productivity you get back from them is so exponential. They're excited to come to work. They sleep well. They don't have migraines and stress about how they're gonna eat their next meal. They eat breakfast. They come to work, and you actually get good productivity out of them, and you benefit from it. It's crazy how the concept of treating people like humans works for you instead of treating like garbage, which apparently still works because you can still get productivity to go as where it is now.
Yeah.
And we call American workers a lot of times, oh, we're just lazy, you don't do that. How dare you make $7 an hour, you lazy bum. And then that forced people to think they have to do even more for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that more American workers need to look at those charts. Anyway, we are going to take our second break now. When we come back, Senate Republicans take fairly unprecedented steps to try to shut down transparency in government. And then look at who is going to be doing enforcement on those who try to wreck our environment. We're going to name names when we come back from this break.
I'm super excited because we have different levels of members. They pay $10 a month, but there are some members that pay a little more, our executive producers, for instance. My favorite thing about executive producers is that we have quarterly calls with them. I love that I'm getting a little transparency and I'm knowing what you guys like and dislike, ideas on how to improve the show, topics that maybe we haven't heard of yet and you really want us to cover. We have so much respect for you because of the fact that you keep us independent and allow us to be uncensored, unfiltered, without worrying about corporate sponsors breathing down our necks and telling us what we can and can't say. So if you want to be a member, obviously no pressure, you can go ahead and join by going to tytnetwork.com/join. I'm gonna ask some uncomfortable questions. First topic that I said that we would discuss a little more is masturbation.
And then I was swimming in a hazelnut river.
Are you sure you're not doing mushrooms? Oh my God, I can achieve an orgasm by myself.
Fuck that, I am gonna talk about it, because there should be no shame around. I think a lot about death because I love life.
That openness led to amazing sex.
And I keep saying to everybody, oh, I gotta go call my wife. I figured that was a good excuse and people can't say, hey, don't call your wife.
I'm gonna release bliss.
It's so weird because at that moment I felt bliss and it smelled like lavender.
At the end, you get to go check, nice job. If you're a member of the Young Turks, you too will rock the world.
Establishment media, corporate media, as I like to say, it's really not journalism. It's kind of become this infotainment, substanceless drivel, and horse race obsession. They all live in this echo chamber and this bubble because they have no idea what, like, actual people are dealing with. Most people, you know, had their jobs sent offshore or are now working three jobs, you know, are struggling just to afford health care. I mean, in going across the country and reporting, I'm talking to people who have to, like, decide between can I take my medication this week or get groceries. Like, they have no clue because they're more interested in, you know, what Trump tweeted or the debt ceiling showdown and, you know, all this stuff that they try to prop up in terms of, like, almost a movie script, you know, like sensational and, you know, protagonist and conflict and all this. And the victims of that are actual people. I think that's why people are responding to us, because, you know, I'm not out covering, like, the sexy story. My biggest passions is kind of showing that, you know, the folks in the work that are part of the working poor now, or formerly middle class, you know, these are not the takers. There's actually been a systematic con job. And they've been conned, and we've all been conned by, you know, what I call the corporate media military industrial complex. Kind of long-winded, but there's been an active cabal, so to speak, of corporations, lobbyists, banks, politicians, and the media to essentially concentrate power into, you know, one vacuum and leave people in Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania. It's not just the Rust Belt. I mean, all over the country, kind of scrapping for the crumbs. So what do we do? I think, honestly, you know, people say, oh, I couldn't do it without you. You know, I always thought those celebrities were bullshit artists. But we can't do it without you. I mean, it took years for them just to hire me because they didn't have the funds to hire a reporter. Now they've hired two more and possibly more on the way. So the first thing you could do is if you like me, if you like what we're doing, let's create more. The GO campaign is a great way. Even if you only can give $10, $20, it all makes a big difference. So if you could contribute, and that's not just to hire more reporters, it takes an army, producers, editors, researchers, cameraman, all that. So the GO campaign, as well as become a member.
Welcome back to the Young Turks, everybody. John Iadarola, J.R. Jackson. A couple
tweeting.
More stories to get to. Let's see. Eric Rooney said, so this is at hashtag TYT Live. Hopefully you have been tweeting us. Eric Rooney says, don't tell me if he gets fired. I want to find out tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern on The Apprentice. They do treat it like that, man. He really does think, like, what does it matter if I fire somebody? I've been firing people for years. Everybody seemed to love it. Okay, let's jump right back into the stories because we don't have much time.
Wow.
Oh, did you have something you want to read?
No.
Oh, no, read your fancy
no,
tweets.
No, I'm not reading
read
anything.
Read your Twitters.
I'm just being clever.
Okay. We'll see how clever. Okay. This morning it was revealed that freedom of the press in the US took a little bit of a beating over the night. The longstanding tradition of allowing free access of media to conduct interviews of our elected officials was shut down. Reporters were told they would no longer be allowed to film or record audio of interviews in the Senate side hallways of the Capitol without special permission, which you might think, special permission. Okay, you need some permission. That's fine. We'll take a look at what this special permission looked like. Television reporters will need permission from senators, the Senate Rules Committee, the Senate Sergeant of Arms, and the Senate Radio and TV Gallery, depending on location, before conducting blah, blah, all of that.
Their mother, their father, grandmother.
Yes, you gotta talk to your grandmother. Now, that is an issue, okay? Now, you might think, well, I don't care about the media, I don't care if they get interviews. Okay, that's fine. You don't have to care about the reporters. This is going to allow senators and congresspeople to evade any sort of responsibility for what they do. We already know they're not doing town halls for the most part anymore. Sometimes having someone ambush them in a hallway and ask them about a vote that they just took or a speech they just gave is the only way that we make clear what they stand for and what they're doing and make sure that there's some sort of responsibility, culpability for what they've done. And it got even darker actually during the day. So reporters were calling in to find out about this policy and find out why they were doing this. And let's look at this tweet. Representative for Mike, that's actually Matreson, it's spelled incorrectly there, who gave the directive, said no comment. Dylan Byers, who's a reporter for CNN, asked for her name and she said, I'm not going to give you that, and hangs up. So you see, the Washington Post had a reporter who was also hung up on, and the woman said, can I ask your name? And then apparently hung up, which means that you're not gonna get the name. Come on, you can't do that. So that's scary. Now, thankfully, there was immediately massive pushback from a lot of politicians, almost universally on the Democratic side, and media figures from online, TV, print, all of that. And thankfully, due to, I believe, this pressure, they have decided to reverse that rules change. So as Casey Hunt originally on Twitter reported, Senate Rules Committee reversed course on hallway interviews, saying you may continue to follow the rules as it was, as if it was yesterday. So thankfully,
they bowed to the pressure.
It looks like they did.
I like making comparisons like this because again, it's already been turned upside down on its head that we forget who these guys work for. They've been elected by
yes.
people. in a way, we're their boss, right?
Yeah.
So at least they have to answer this. We at least have to know what the hell they're doing. Okay, let's go back to regular jobs. You were your cashier at the grocery store, and you end your shift, and they check what's in your cash register in case you slide to slip out a $100 bill.
Yeah.
That's underneath, because we know that's where they keep the big bills.
Yeah.
So if your supervisor comes by and says, okay, we're doing check on the registers, and then we do this and they count your money, go, oh no, you don't get to look at the money that's in my register. I'm gonna put this away and you're not gonna fucking talk to me about it anymore. Yeah. They're gonna go, oh, okay. Well, you follow your ass out the door and you're fired.
Yeah.
It's just the way it works in the real world. You can't say nobody gets to monitor what I'm doing on my job after you hired me. How dare you?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I dare, and you're gone.
Yeah.
Everyone else has to live this way.
Exactly. And people with great responsibility or power or something, Spider-Man, look it up. You know what I'm saying there. These people have incredible power to influence our country, to influence the world. The idea that they're going to reduce transparency. Like, we've been clear that Donald Trump hates the media and wants to do what he can to change libel laws and all that. But this wasn't Donald Trump. This was Senate Republicans trying to make this change. And think about the big votes that they're gonna take in the near future. When they vote on Trump Care, when they steal health insurance from 20 to 30 million Americans, when they change the tax code, when they basically cut corporate taxes down to a third of what they are now, they do not want a camera in their face after that. And that's what they're trying to set up for, thankfully.
The people that gave them money and lobbyists, if they went to them and said, hey, I want to know what you guys are doing to live up to what I gave you, what if they went, nope, not gonna do it?
Yeah, exactly. They'll always have access in America, unfortunately. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about that donor and corporate influence. Under Donald Trump, our environment is screwed, and the EPA is every day getting swampier and swampier. And in this video, we're gonna break down two recent hires that have to do with our environment that make clear who this administration is going to serve. So first I wanna talk about Patrick Traylor. That apparently is his actual name. Partner at Hogan Lovells was recently hired as the EPA's Deputy Assistant Administrator in the Office of Enforcement and Compliance Assurance. With both sounds like the most boring job in the world, but also represents a very powerful position. We're talking about one of the main investigative lawyers that's intended to protect the environment in the EPA. So let's talk about who this person is and where his loyalties might lie. Back when he was working at Hogan Lovells, his clients included all of these different corporations that you're gonna see in this list. Daimler AG, we can bring it up, thanks. Dominion Energy, Edison Mission Energy, Flint Hills Resources, Invista, the Koch brothers, NRG Energy, which by the way is a terrible name for an energy corporation, it's redundant. Southern California Edison, TransCanada, by the way, you've heard them in the news for their pipelines, and Venture Global LNG. So I don't doubt that you need an experienced lawyer in this position. But a guy who for literally decades has been defending the interests of some of the biggest polluters and environmental aggressors in our country is not the person who should be investing in them. Especially when you consider that the day he leaves that position at the EPA, he's gonna go back to an incredibly profitable position, probably for one of those corporations.
It's amazing. You'd have to try and make it up. And I hate to not hate the term, but I don't know if it's too harsh. The murderous row of people you appoint to be parts of the head already, Scott Pruitt already, but then also people underneath just to make sure that it's chocked full of people with the exact opposite interest in mind for what the department is supposed to do. So instead of the proposed policies of getting rid of the Department of Education, getting rid of the EPA, abolishing the IRS, as Ted Cruz liked to say, instead, we'll just chalk it full of people that will virtually destroy it from the inside out anyway, and say we're staffing it when actually you're just eating it alive.
Exactly.
Just to get to your interest. I don't know how we can keep accepting it. It's blatant.
It's blatant. It is blatant. And we've got another name for you, perhaps even worse than a trailer. Let's talk about Jeffrey Bossert Clark, nominated by President Donald Trump. It was in a graphic, they got me to say it. Now I feel dirty. On Tuesday to serve as the Justice Department's top environmental lawyer. So this isn't the EPA, but it still has to do with those who abuse the environment. Clark previously represented BP after the 2010 Deepwater Horizon drilling rig explosion and Macondo oil well rupture that killed 11 workers and was, as you probably remember, the largest offshore environmental disaster in US history. He was there fighting for BP at that point. But it's not just a financial thing. There's the financial component. There's also an ideological component to where his loyalties lie. So he was a partner in the Washington office of Kirkland & Ellis. Previously, he's represented the US Chamber of Commerce in lawsuits challenging the federal government's authority to regulate carbon emissions. In court, he has repeatedly argued that it is inappropriate to base government policymaking on the scientific consensus presented by the IPCC. So there, he's making money. But he also had a blog, by the way, where for a long time he's talked about how we shouldn't be listening to scientists when it comes to the environment. He said, "When did America risk coming to be ruled by foreign scientists and the apparatchiks at the United Nations?" And as made clear by the NRDC's Clean Air Program Director, he has a long history of opposing climate action for corporate and ideological clients.
Because you know, foreign scientists are all the ones that are saying there's something going on with our climate. American scientists, they're on board.
Exactly,
100%
yeah.
of them are like, oh, America,
agree.
Forget the reality of science. Let's just go ahead and say that we're the best and we can do whatever we want. It's yeah. not going to hurt that bad.
Yeah, and look, so they're staffing up the EPA, but this is the EPA. It's also Department of Justice as well. And all those people who are supposed to be watchdogs making sure that we don't sell off the environment, our mineral rights and all the public lands, that we don't pollute, that we don't ruin our streams and our water and our air, our coastlines, that we don't drill every drop of oil out of our land while we still can. Those people, man, they're all hacks for industry now. They're all people who seem like true believers that don't believe that climate change is happening, and they have been paid to hold that position in the past.
And then after they do, and they say that it's for the benefit of America and the wealth of America, let's refer back to a previous story we just did. The wealth of America is not going back to the people who they need you yeah. to continue to vote for, people who are gonna put you in place to be like, look at the wealth of America that you don't get any part of.
Exactly,
what's the benefit?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, maybe you get to drive through a nice neighborhood, look at the fancy houses you can't afford. I guess that's a silver lining. Anyway, that unfortunately is all the time we have. Damn, there's another good story we wanted to get to, but that's what happens. We are gonna take a break. Thank you, by the way, JR. It's not often we get to do a two-person panel.
Yeah,
here.
We talk too much anyway, it doesn't matter, right?
Certainly do.
Who would have thought? I have the same problem everyone else does.
The same problem, after criticizing them previously.
I'm gonna go back to doing that tomorrow.
Yeah, I probably will too. We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, my co-host from Think Tank, Hannah Cranston, is gonna be joining us, leading us through a second hour. And TYT Network's Nerd Alert host, Kim Horcher, is also gonna be here. So tweet us in advance of that. We'll be back after just a few minutes.